Hello. So today we are going to cover GST and supply chain management, or rather the impact of GST on supply chain management. So some of the topics that we are going to cover are the definition and the need for GST, what are the objectives, salient features, what is the model of GST which has been implemented or has been implemented in India, what are the different tax rates under GST, what are the exemptions in GST, something about the implementation and about the challenges and solutions for GST. So let's start with the definition. Goods and service tax is a comprehensive tax levy on manufacture, sale and consumption of goods and services at a national level. Now every word of this has a meaning behind it. So when you say goods and service tax, that means this is a tax which covers not only the goods, but it also covers the services. In the past, you had different taxes for goods, different taxes for services. Here, GST covers both of them. The second part, the comprehensive tax levy. Why do we call it comprehensive? Because you had a plethora of taxes before GST was introduced. You had something called as the excise duty. You had the CST for the central sales tax. For the state sales tax, we used to have something called as MST for Maharashtra, which is the Maharashtra sales tax, also known as VAT. And you had various other things like works contract tax, service tax, you had the entertainment tax, you had the octroi. The octroi was later on even called as LBT, you know, that means you didn't have to pay it at the border whenever you were entering any municipal limit. But it was like, you had to file the return where you had to account for the material. So all these taxes, you know, a variety of taxes were all consolidated and included under GST. And that is the reason it is known as a comprehensive tax levy. The other important thing is that excise used to be a manufacturing tax. Excise was applicable only on manufacturing activities, whereas sales tax was applicable on the transfer of ownership of goods. Now here, the goods and service tax applies on all the activities. So this is very important to understand, and most important, this is a tax which is applied at the national level. So when we talk about excise used to be a central tax on the manufacturing, but the sales tax used to be at the central level, which is what we call as the CST, and the state level. The state level, as we said, every state used to call it by their own name, and subsequently it was called as VAT. But now you have a consolidated tax system which is applicable across the nation. GST is a tax on goods and services with value addition at each stage, having comprehensive and continuous chain of set of benefits from the producers and the service providers point up to the retailers level, where only the final consumer should bear the tax. Let's understand what this statement means. It's a very, very deep statement. So we already talked about the goods and services with the value addition at every stage. What does it mean? In excise, once the manufacturer sold the material to a distributor, then the tax used to not be passed on, or it will be passed on at the same level. So for example, if there is, assume that the tax, the excise is only 10% for simplicity's sake. Once you are selling a good at 100 rupees, 10 rupees excise is charged. That is, distributor who receives this goods, you know, under SANVAT, he will get a credit of 10 rupees. Now, he may sell the material at 110 rupees or 120 rupees, but the duty, the SANVAT, which he charges on the goods, used to be still be 10 rupees, which was originally what was paid by the manufacturer. In the VAT, there was a concept of value addition at every stage. And VAT, as you know, was the sales tax. So what does it mean? That if the company sold the goods at 100 rupees, let us say that 10 rupees was the VAT charged on it, then the distributor will get a set off or a credit, tax credit of 10 rupees. Now, when he sells the goods to the next member in the supply chain, at the time, whatever is the value of the goods, on top of that, 10% will be charged. So suppose he is selling the goods at, let's say, 110 rupees, then he will pay the tax at the rate of 10%, which will be 11 rupees. So in GST, what they have done is, one, the consolidation of all the taxes, and they have brought in the concept of VAT, the value added tax. That means at each stage, the tax is applied based on the value addition. So imagine now, it can be a manufacturer, it can be a trader, it can be simply a reseller. When the goods are removed by the manufacturer, he pays the GST. When it goes to the distributor, he gets a credit of the tax which has been paid on the goods. Now, assume again for simplicity that 10 rupees is the rate of GST applicable. Okay, so 100 rupees was the sale value, 10 rupees will be the GST charged on it. Now, when it goes to the distributor gets 10 rupee as a tax credit. When he sells it to, let's say, the next person in the value chain, he sells it for 110 and he will pay a duty of 10% on 110, not on 100. So he is going to pay now a tax of 11 rupees. The next stage, the person who is getting the material at 110, he gets a tax credit. When he sells it to the next level at, let's say, 120, he will again charge GST. And also, the value added tax means that every place, whatever is the value addition, and mind you, the value addition can be in terms of any processing of the goods. That means if somebody is doing a manufacturing activity or a labeling activity or a packaging activity. So as the value keeps on increasing, the tax on the goods also keep on increasing. And at every stage, the processor has to pay an additional tax which is equal to the value addition. So for example, if you look at the distributor in this case, from the manufacturer, he got the material at 100 rupees, correct? And 10 rupees, which was the tax, the GST paid on it, he gets a credit of that. Now, when he is selling the goods to the next person in the value chain at 110, he is paying 11 rupees as the tax. Now, what it means is that the value addition that he did, he got the material at 100 and he sold it at 110. That means the value addition is 10 rupees. So he is going to pay only 10% of the 10 rupee value addition additional into the GST kitty. So this is going to happen. So at every stage, as the value addition happens to the goods, or as cost is incurred, and if the price at which the goods are transacted increases, you will find the tax also will increase in the same proportion. And this will stop at the consumer. So assume that you are buying a toothpaste. The toothpaste is manufactured by, let's say, a job worker who is working for an FMCG company. Now, when he transfers the material to the FMCG company or to the distributor, he is paying a GST based on the price at which he is going to sell or transfer the material. At every stage, the value is increasing, and so is the GST component in that product. So assume that the material comes to the retailer at a price of 80 rupees. So again, we take the example of 10% of GST. 8 rupees would be the GST which has been paid on the product, right? And 8 rupees is what the retailer will be getting as a tax credit, input tax credit. Now, when he sells it to the consumer for, let's say, 100 rupees, then he will be charging 10 rupees, which is 10% of the 100 rupees on the goods. Now, when you as a consumer buy these goods, you do not get any tax credit. So this is the concept of only the end consumer bears the tax. That means all the people in between, provided they are all registered dealers, that means, you know, they are registered with the GST, they will get an input tax credit. They will get a set off of the GST amount. So let's revisit the statement. So GST is a tax on goods and service with value addition at each stage, having comprehensive and continuous chain of set of benefits. Set off is the tax credit that each individual in the value chain gets from the products or service provider up to the retailer. Because up to retailer, they get the tax credit or what we call as a set off. And only the final consumer should bear the tax. So I hope this definition is clear. So why is the need for GST in India? Because, you know, when you did not have GST, we said that there were a plethora of taxes, and compliance with these taxes was very, very difficult, because you had excise, you had the central sales tax, you had the state sales tax, you had the octroi, you had service tax, you had works contracts tax. And for each of these, there were different government bodies which were actually, auditing you or, tracking you. The compliance was also very difficult because you had to pay the tax, and the cycle for each of these were different. So let's look at, what are the some of the issues which actually necessitated the implementation of GST. So system at both central and state levels remain complex. So, the kind of taxes we talked about, some of them are the central taxes, some are the state taxes, but compliance with various taxes, was a big, big headache. It subjected to disputes and court challenges, slow and expensive. So, there were a lot of conflicts, because the classification of the material under the state tax, under the central tax, even under the octroi, like there were certain articles, which were not subjected to any excise or sales tax, but they were subjected to octroi. So there were a lot of disputes, even in terms of classification, in terms of duties, etc. System suffered from substantial compliance gaps. So naturally, when you have so many different compliances, so many different taxes, then naturally gaps are supposed to, will occur, because it becomes very difficult to comply with a plethora of taxes. So it suffered from cascading tax effects due to multiple taxation of state and central governments. Now, what is the cascading effect? I remember that many years ago, I was working for a company which was just located outside Mumbai. And whenever we used to supply any material within Mumbai, you had to first calculate. So when you are looking at the invoice, you first calculate the excise duty, then you calculate the Maharashtra sales tax, then on the gross value, you calculate the octroi, which is payable for entry into Mumbai. That means the octroi payable to the Bombay Municipal Corporation. Now, the sales tax law said that every expense, including, let's say, if you're charging freight to the customer, that has to be taken into consideration when you arrive at the taxable value. Taxable value is the value on which the sales tax has to be applied. So what we used to do is, we used to add the excise, the sales tax, the octroi, work out a total sales tax value based on the gross value again. And it was a kind of a iterative process. Fortunately, we had computers and the invoicing was done. But it was a very complex calculation. Also, how does the cascading effect comes? Now, in terms of the Maharashtra sales tax, it is vatable. That means, you know, if I sell the goods within Maharashtra, whoever is buying the goods, he gets a credit, and when he sells it again to another registered trader, then that trader can again avail set off or credit of the sales tax. But what happens if I sold it to a party in Gujarat? So in that case, there was earlier 3% CST, central sales tax. Subsequently, it was a 2% CST. Now, this was not vatable. That means it was a cost. So now the Gujarat entity who is buying these goods from me sells it to somebody else, then he has already paid this 2% sales tax, but that becomes a cost to him. And when he again sells it, then he is paying tax on the total value, which also includes the sales tax which was paid while the goods were sold from Maharashtra to Gujarat. Also, there were similar cases as far as excise were concerned. So these were some of the effects which actually resulted in cascading of the taxes. That means you have already paid the tax, and then again you are required to pay the tax on top of the tax. So that's the cascading value. SANVAT and the state VATs was dictated by the constraints imposed by the Constitution, which allows neither the center nor the state to levy taxes on a comprehensive base of goods and services and at all points in the supply chain. So there were certain constraints where certain items could not be taxed because of state policies or the center's policies. So SANVAT is nothing but excise duty, and just because you could take a credit, SANVAT, you could only take a credit if you were a manufacturer. If you were not a manufacturer, then you could not take credit of it, or rather you could take a credit, and when you resell it, the same duty amount had to be paid forward. Okay, so there were limitations even with the SANVAT and the VAT system which existed. So the SANVAT is levied on goods manufactured or produced in India. This gives rise to definitional issues as to what constitutes manufacturing, and valuation issues to determine the value on which the tax is to be levied. Now, imagine the industries that I worked for, we used to have certain goods which we were outsourcing. So you are bringing the goods, the supplier, your supplier is calling the goods by X name. Right? And when you get the goods, you are relabeling the goods with your brand name. Now, for certain tariff headings, for certain HSN codes, the relabeling amounted to manufacture. So there you could sell the goods by applying fresh SANVAT. So let's understand this. When such goods were received by me, I could take a credit of the SANVAT which was already paid on the goods. I could relabel the products, and based on my sale value, I had to again pay SANVAT on it. But there were a lot of goods where it was not considered as a manufacturing. So suppose I got the product with a name X, and I relabel it with my company's brand name with a name Y, then it did not qualify as manufacturing, which means I did not get the SANVAT credit, and I had to pass on the same credit to my customer. This also had various other issues, you know, because I didn't want to disclose where I was getting the material from which supplier I was getting the material. So if my distributor or if my customer insisted that he wants the SANVAT document for taking a credit, then he will be able to see from the invoice where the material was manufactured and where it has come from. So there were a lot of other complications also as far as the SendVet is concerned. So one was also this, you know, that which activities amount to manufacture. Because many a times manufacturing, we normally think is like an industry where you are making a product, you know, from raw materials. But there are times when manufacturing could be simply, you know, repacking the material into a retail pack. That means somebody is getting the material in bulk in a tanker and they are filling it into retail packs. And that also is classified as amounting to manufacturing. So there were a lot of disputes regarding the classification of goods, or rather definition of whether it is manufactured or produced or not. So this was also one of the issues faced prior to GST implementation. Effective burden of tax becomes dependent on the point of manufacturing relative to the value added beyond this point. So excise was a manufacturing tax. So it was always collected at the point of manufacture, and the benefit also went to the state in which the goods were manufactured. So there were a lot of other implications, you know, that is the taxable value at the point of manufacturing relative to the value added beyond the point. One simple example I'll give you. Let us say that there are some goods which are manufactured, the example that I gave where, you know, you are outsourcing the material. The material is manufactured, let's say, at 100 rupees. The excise is paid on 100 rupees. But once I get it, then I am selling it for a profit to my distributor. My distributor is selling it to the retailer, again for a profit. But the tax on manufacturing, the SendVet, remains the same. That means the government is losing out on the value addition which is happening beyond the point of manufacture. And many companies were doing this deliberately. So they would have various steps in the process where at the first step, they would pay a very less duty. And subsequently, because the subsequent operations did not amount to manufacture, there'll be no excise payable or no SendVet payable. So there were similar issues, you know, regarding the value addition and the tax collection. So GST put a country in line with practices in the other countries globally, because GST is implemented in many countries globally. So what are the objectives of GST? Now, for all you know, GST was introduced from 1st of July 2017. So what were the objectives when they introduced GST? So one was amalgamation of a large number of central and state taxes into a single tax. And a single tax is GST. Now, we will come to this later, because even though we say it's a single tax, so it's not just one single tax. We will come to, there are some classification or bifurcations even within the GST. So mitigating cascading or double taxation in a major way and pave the way for a common national market. So all the problems that we see, all the challenges that we saw pre-GST of double taxation, of the government losing the revenue because of the practices of the supply chains. So these were overcome to make Indian products competitive in domestic and international market. Also, you know, it simplified the system. It reduced the taxes in certain cases. And I'll come to this later, how government had actually taken a very hasty step in, introducing the GST. And later on, they had to make certain amends because they found that by doing so, they were also losing out in certain places. Easier to administer due to transparent and self-policing character. So instead of having, say, 5 or 7 different taxes, when you have only 1 or 2 taxes, then it becomes much easier to manage or administer the GST. It's much more transparent. And, the basic fundamental principle is that it's a self-policing thing. and we'll come to this also a little later. An optimal design of the consumption tax system, taking into account both production efficiency and distributional concern. So it's a very optimal design, and unlike the excise that we saw, which was based on the manufacturing, here GST is dependent on the consumption, and this also I will describe a little more in detail as we go along. So it takes into account both the production efficiency and the distribution concerns. It simplifies this entire process. How it does that, we will see that. So desired structure achieved by a combination of taxes and transfers. Okay. So what are the objectives? The optimal pattern of tax rates implied by a given degree of aversion to poverty and concern for the poor. So, you know, the way the tax was designed was the necessities will be taxed at zero level, or they will be taxed at the minimum level. And gradually the taxes increase, you know, as you go move away from the necessity. So the luxury items will actually draw the maximum tax. To apply neutrality principles as per the following points: the tax be a uniform percentage of the final retail price of a product, regardless of the supply chain arrangement for its manufacturing and distribution. So we saw that in the earlier system, the excise was charged at one point. Subsequently, the excise was not charged. Only the sales tax was charged, and there were other taxes, you know, like the octroi, also subsequently became LBT. So these were being charged. So here they brought it into a uniform practice where a uniform percentage was charged on the final retail price of the product. So, you know, it could be that in certain industries there could be different rates of GST for the intermediates or the raw material, but the final product, they will all attract a uniform rate, irrespective of the supply chain. So whatever kind of a supply chain you have, whether you have a manufacturer directly selling to a consumer or a manufacturer routing the sale through a distribution and a retail network, the taxes, etc., will be uniform. The tax on input will be fully creditable to avoid tax cascading. So we already saw this, that at every stage, whenever it changes hands, whenever there is a transfer of ownership, the input tax, that means whatever tax has been paid on the goods by the seller, can be credited into the buyer's account. And when the buyer actually becomes the seller, that means when he sells it, then he has to pay the duty on the sales value. So this, you know, the GST is fully creditable. At every stage, you get 100% credit of the taxes paid by your supplier. The tax be levied on the basis of destination principle, with all of the tax on a given product or a service accruing in the jurisdiction of its final consumption. So what it means is, in case of excise, the taxes used to accrue to the state where the manufacturing activity used to happen. Now here, in case of GST, it is based on the consumption. So suppose you are selling the goods within the same state, then you are applying the GST, which is CGST and SGST, the central GST or central goods and service tax, and the state's goods and service tax. Suppose you are selling it to another state, it's an intrastate, then you are charging the IGST. So the credit for the tax will be taken by the state where the goods are going to be received, where they are going to be consumed. So suppose that you sold a material from Maharashtra to Gujarat, and from Gujarat the goods are transferred to, let's say, Rajasthan. Then, because the tax credit will be taken first by the buyer in Gujarat, when he sells it to Rajasthan, he will again be paying GST, and that credit will be taken by Rajasthan. And suppose the consumer is in Rajasthan, that is where the consumer bears the duty. That means the benefit of the tax is accrued to the state in which the consumption is occurring. Simplification of tax administration and compliance. So the tax design, simpler it would be to administer and encourage compliance, because instead of 5, 6, 7 different taxes, now you are only managing basically 3 taxes. So CGST, SGST and IGST. CGST, SGST is when you are selling within the state. IGST when you are selling it in another state. Likewise, if you as a manufacturer or as a trader are receiving material from another state, then you will be getting the goods against IGST. That means the IGST will be paid on it. And if you are buying it from within your state, then you know you will get the invoice with CGST and SGST, and you can get a credit of those taxes as well. So it would be simpler to administer, and it encourages compliance. The infrastructure for the tax administration. So you also don't require a very complex infrastructure, because even the government has to invest in infrastructure for every kind of a tax. And when you say infrastructure, it also means the human resource. So you require the tax officials, vigilance and the audit teams, you know, which are supposed to see whether the industry has paid the right amount of tax or not, whether there is any evasion of the taxes, etc. So in terms of infrastructure also, this gives you a major benefit. The degree of harmonization among the taxes levied by the center and the states. So even earlier, there were a lot of discrepancies, or I would say differences, between the taxes from state to state. I remember many years ago, Maharashtra happened to revise the MST rates, and because of this, a lot of industries shifted their operations to Gujarat, because Gujarat had a more favorable tax regime as compared to Maharashtra. So this kind of differences have been eliminated in GST. So in GST now, you have a uniform tax rate across the states. So, and there is a uniformity even in the taxes levied by the center and the state. That we will see. Why do we say that there is a uniformity in the taxes levied by the center and the state? Thank you.